सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्थु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे Okay. And we have, okay, Brahma Samhita. Then we're on text 27, the initiation of Lord Brahma. Then this is the okay, I think this is maybe Bhakti Siddhanta. Here, Brahma Samhita purport, yes. Whoever has received the same Gayatri in reality has attained his spiritual rebirth. This of twice born one's golden lineage souls in this mundane world. Far inferior to that of the twice born who obtains admission into the transcendental world. Because the initiation or acquisition of transcendental birth as a result of spiritual initiation is the highest of glories, inasmuch as the jiva is thereby enabled to attain to the transcendental realm. Brahma Samhita 527 purport. So the first birth, then you're born into, as they said, worldly nature and lineage. And, you know, so he's saying the twice born aspect there, that means that you have the samskaras. And so that one doesn't have samskaras, one's just born into the world, then that will just be, you know, everybody's got that. Better than that will be the aspect of someone being born twice, by, you know, second birth according to the worldly nature and lineage. But far superior to that is who attains this twice born status based on gaining the spiritual initiation with the spiritual mantras. That's then so far beyond, because the other one just gives you birth into a particular, you know, social economic kind of position that may change with time, and eventually one has to leave and it may disappear, whatever, it's temporary. But being second initiated into the trans spiritual initiation, then, as he says, that is thereby enabled to attain the transcendental realm, right? So that means that you're talking about initiation means to initiate, to begin the process of moving to the spiritual world. Otherwise, the other one is you're initiated, it begins the process of, you know, brahminical behavior, knowledge, activities like that can help raise your piety and raise your consciousness to some degree, but it won't bring you to the transcendental position like that. That it's not going to do that. So that's why we see is bhakti. So technically, if one doesn't get the upanayanam, then for the Vaishnavas, it's not actually a big deal, because you are initiated into the transcendental position, and being initiated into the transcendental position, then from there, now you can move forward into Krishna consciousness, into developing love for Krishna. While the other will give you
we can't hear you.
The problem is that it doesn't actually take you beyond that. But we see with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, because the Vaishnav is the perfection of the Brahman, therefore he wanted to establish that Vaishnavs are no less than Brahmins. Therefore he gave the sacred thread and the Upanayanam ceremony. Right? So then one has the Brahma Gayatri. But otherwise, for going back to Godhead, The Kama Gayatri is complete in itself, right? With Kam Bija, the Gopal mantra, and then the, how you say, preliminary mantras of Guru and Garanga. With that, it's complete in itself. So there's no need to, for the spiritual benefit, there's no need of the Brahma Gayatri, right? But it's being given just to establish that the Vaishnav is automatically a Brahmin, right? Like Sukadev Goswami. And he's known as Sukadev Goswami, the best of the Brahmins, the best of the Paramahamsas, all these that. He didn't get second initiated. I mean, didn't get the Upanayana, because as soon as he was born, he just ran off. Six Goswamis, it depends. But they were Brahmin back. Good chance they got, because you get that when you're young. But it's just they'd be ostracized by the Brahmin community. But that doesn't mean you can't chant your mantras. It's just that, they don't want to have anything to do with you. So Rupa and Sanatan, Gopal Bhatta, he would have gotten there. Then Raghunath Bhatta would have. Then you have Gopal Bhatta, Raghunath Bhatta, Jiva. Then he's, I think he's the, would be the nephew of Rupa and Sanatan. So they're also the Brahmin family. So Raghunath Das is the only one may or may not have. But the point is that, even as Vaishyas, they could get, but whether it was their tradition or not, they were practicing or not. But the point is, but it's not the important part. That's why you see is and then you, sometimes you see, depending upon what it is, pictures then the Vaishnavas may have, may not. So they would wear the thread if they had gotten it. If they didn't wear the thread. So it wasn't a big thing for them. Others the in the general case, there may not be any difficulty appreciating the Vaishnavas are amongst the smartest, then they would see it as a lower position because they haven't gotten the Upanayana. Chakravarti. No, Vishwanath Chakravarti would have. Narottam Das Thakur, I think he didn't have. Because who knows what's the thing, but at 12 he has already, had received the love of Godhead that Lord Chaitanya had left with the Bhagirathi River to give him, at the right time. So when he came down to bathe, then he went in as just a young kid and came out in transcendental ecstasy. So I'm not sure he was too worried about that, So yeah, so it's basically it's just that aspect that it's not even so much as a preaching tool as it is that the Hindu community would respect the Vaishnavas like that, because they have a tendency of this position they respect and no position they don't respect. It's a natural neophyte position. Either they're more pious, so then in their nature, so they kind of respect everybody because they don't know who is respectable or not, so they're respectful to everybody. But it's not that it's respectful in knowledge, it's just a cultural element. And then you'll have those who are, have that position, that set social status like that, and then they may feel they're superior. So unless you are in that position, they don't even want to listen to you. Like it's some, yeah. So the yeah, so the Vaishnavas then is there, and since it's there, then it's helpful. It helps purify, it helps uplift, it helps basically. I think one definition that someone was mentioning that I think Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was talking about, that the Brahma Gayatri then helps remove the Purusha Bhav in the living entity. Like that, it purifies from that. So that was the main element. So then, so he's pointing out is that is the highest glories, in as much as the jiva is enabled to attain to the transcendental realm. That's the glory of it. Not that, oh, I got this mantra and all that, and so therefore I'm glorious. No, it's glorious because that opens the door that you can go back to Godhead. That's the point. Yeah? Okay. Srila Prabhupada explains how the progression of the three principal deities is also represented in the Kama Gayatri. This mantra is just like a Vedic hymn, but it is the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, right? Because Gayatri is then our Vedic hymns, because they're, it means, it's just like a Vedic hymn that it's in the form of the Gayatri meter, and it has its swaras and everything like that. So it's a Vedic mantra. You find the, all, from what I know of, I've heard that most all the Gayatris are in the fourth part of the Taittiriya Upanishad called Mahanarayana Upanishad. It has a section where all the mantras are, all the Gayatris are. But he's pointing out is that here it's the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, right? Because it's not just saying, like you have Krishna Gayatris, but they'll just, you know, just say some point, but it's not referring to the Lord specifically in his Bhagavan feature and how he's interacting with the devotees. But in this Gayatri is how he's attracting, how he's pouring the pastimes, how the transcendental ecstasy that's being appreciated by him and his devotees, that aspect there is not being brought out in these others. So that's why it says, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You know, so the other may be, you know, referring to Krishna as he is in his incarnation, expanding from Kiridakshai Vishnu as a Leela avatar, you know, like that, or some aspect like that. But here is the Kama is given because that's the original of all the Gayatris. The origin is there, like in the material world. Then the origin is going to be the Brahma Gayatri, right? So you have Kama Gayatri, you have the Hare Krishna mantra, expanding from that is Kama Gayatri, coming from that is Gopal mantra. You'll get the other Gayatris, the down two, then the last one will be Brahma Gayatri, right? So then from Brahma Gayatri, Om is the first to go through into the material world, you know, across the Viraja. Then from that, Murbhuvaswa, then the Brahma Gayatri, then Purusha Shukta, then the particular Veda, because each Veda of the four Vedas has its Purusha Shukta. So then expands the full Veda. And then within that will be found the Gayatri, the other Gayatris like that. So then for those who don't understand, who don't know what's beyond, but doesn't know what's beyond the material world, they only know what's coming in here. If those who know what's beyond, if they don't know what's beyond a Mahanarayan, they don't understand this either. They won't see the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, Kama Gayatri Gopal as these, you know, top there. They're going to ask different avatars, and that are coming from the position of what's his name? But he's pointing out, no, this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. I mean, so Bhagavan in his topmost feature, right, as Braja Krishna, he is this mantra. And if you don't appreciate that, then it can be as Krishna Kiridakshai Vishnu, then that aspect will be what benefit you'll gain. But if you understand by Lord Chaitanya's grace that this mantra is then bringing you to Braja, then you'll get that effect, right? There's no difference between the Kama Gayatri and Krishna. Both are composed of 24 and a half transcendental letters. The main mantra depicted in letters is also Krishna. The mind is just like the moon. Due to this, there is a perverted reflection of desire in human society and amongst all kinds of entities. Right? So, anything in the world is coming from the world, you get this perverted reflection of desire, perverted reflection of desire in the human society. Krishna's desire is to interact with the devotees based on affection. But here, it becomes perverted, so it's about oneself, right? And then it takes on the form of sense gratification. or gross or subtle, as opposed to in the spiritual world, it's just about rasa and that exchange of loving exchanges between the Lord and the devotee. So that's, you see, it becomes burden. Right? And so it's 24 and a half because Krishna has all these moons in his body. So the forehead, his forehead is the half moon. Right? So that's the 24 and a half. Right? In the mantra, Krishna is called Kamadev or Madan Mohan, the deity who established our relationship with Krishna. Govinda or Pushpabana, who carries an arrow made of flowers, is the personality of Godhead who accepts our devotional service. Right? Because that would be the Abhideya, right? Ananda or Gopijana Vallabha satisfies all the gopis and is the ultimate goal of life, right? Prayojana. This Kama Gayatri or Madan Mohan Govinda and Gopinath. Right? So Gopijana Vallabha is Gopinath, right? This Kama Gayatri simply does not belong to this material world. It means it's just not part of here. It's not that, oh yeah, you could use it that way, but it's actually, no, it's from there and it's come down. Just like Golok Era Premadhan, Hari Namir Sankirtan, right? It's come down from the spiritual world. So they're chanting Hare Krishna in Goloka, right? So it's not just we use it here. That's what they chant. They chant there, So Swetadweep, they're chanting. There's constantly chanting of Krishna's name in brunch and all this. And so all this is going, and so it's all from there. When one is advanced in spiritual understanding, he can worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead with his spiritually purified senses and fulfill the desires of the Lord. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 8, 138, 39, purport. So interesting. One can worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead with his spiritually purified senses and fulfill the desires of the Lord, right? Because we're thinking the next part will be, he can worship the Supreme Person of Godhead with his spiritual purified senses and thus, merge in the ocean of bliss or whatever. No, it's you please Krishna. If you fulfill Krishna's desires with your spiritually purified senses, means your senses are engaged not for your own satisfaction, they're engaged for Krishna's. That then can fulfill the desires of Krishna, right? Because the point is we're thinking, okay, well, that's nice, but what about me? But the point is as it's pointed out, you water the root of the tree, the whole tree is happy. So that's one of our major illusions is no, I'm going to be the enjoyer on my own. And to do that, I have to control something to get, like, if I don't have the samosa in my hand where I'm controlling it and I can put it in my mouth, I can't enjoy it. I have to control it. Right? So that's why you have to be in control. Or yes, I've somehow or another snuck the bucket of halava off and I've stuck it in my locker. I'm in control. So now I can enjoy whenever I like. Right? So there always has to be that aspect of control to enjoy, because but Krishna, he's just automatically whatever desires, then that's what's happening. So the point is being part and parcel of him, when he's happy, we'll be happy. Since we're not c connecting ourselves with him, even though we are, but we're acting as if we're not, then we won't get that benefit. Right? And when we are acting in as servant of Krishna, then when Krishna is pleased, we're happy because we're part and parcel of him. He's happy, we're happy. Like that. And you can say it's, but then the point is we're small, but then if we're in line with the big, then we get the experience of that. Does that make sense? It's just like, let's say you have a musical instrument and it has the main strings and then it has all these subset of strings underneath and they're perfectly tuned like that to the notes. So as the main strings play the notes, that vibration then, because they're in tune, they're called sympathetic strings, they vibrate. So if you play one note, that one that's tuned to that note, it also vibrates. So that's the point, is when we're in tune with serving Krishna, when he's happy, we're happy. And there isn't another process. You can say no, but in the material world we get happiness. But the point is people are looking for Krishna in the material world. They don't know it, it's as George G. pointed out in the introduction, I mean, what is the preface to the Krishna book, everybody's looking for Krishna. So whatever they're doing, they think it's their money, it's their house, their, you know, whatever it is, the taste they want to get from it is Krishna, because the potency that makes it valuable is Krishna. It's not that those funny little pieces of paper or plastic that have some faces on it or some architecture or some countryside, you know, and that and some numbers on it have any real value. You know, it's just that it's Krishna's potency that gives it that value. And we expect that, yes, there is such a thing as I can have something that is of value and trade it for something else of value. I value that. I have this of value. I can trade it. That's inherent in the living entity. Even the animals know that. Right? They do something. You do something for them, they do something back. You know? So it's just the way they work. So it's Krishna that the living entity is looking for, but because they think, no, it's the money that makes me happy, therefore they don't get the benefit of, it doesn't come across as devotional service or transcendental happiness. Right? So that becomes the point, is that when they know that what the happiness you gain from money is actually Krishna, then you give up the pursuit of money for yourself. And if it's useful for Krishna, you have it. If it's not, you don't. And you just pursue looking for Krishna. Right? Because that's all there is. The living entity, any taste it gets, it's the potency of Krishna. Now, you have its natural forms, and you know, that are reflected in its natural form and goodness, and then in passion. Then in ignorance, you start the distortion. And basically in that, you can get basically 8 million different distortions off of that, you know, and then there's going to be some mix of that in the 400,000. So that's what you're getting. So it's that you have the perverted reflection. Means the reflection is the same form, it's just backwards, because now it's about you. Then you can distort it, right? Because we can see is, oh, some people go for really crazy stuff. That's because now it's distorted, but the thing that they're looking for is still Krishna. So that's important to note. So that's why if someone gets, you know, distracted by, let's say they're doing something that involves, you know, so we gave the example of money, then they're doing something for money, you know, and it's for Krishna, but they get distracted by the money is what's important. No, it's Krishna that's important. So what's the solution? You just remember it's about Krishna, not about the money. Like that. It means you can use it in Krishna's service, but it's not about the money. Right? Does that make sense? So if it's about Krishna, then all the other features of the if it's for Krishna's pleasure, you know, in the Hladini, then from your actions in Samvit, in the environment of Sandini, means external results are all coming, the transformations are coming. But they're there for pleasing Krishna. Mother showed his cooking to please Krishna, right? It's all about Krishna. Nanda Baba won't eat until Krishna comes and sits down, right? Then they'll have their lunch. It's not that he's eating. Mother Jashoda cooked for him. No, they're all cooking for Krishna, like that. So everybody's in the kitchen cooking for Krishna. And so it's about Krishna. That's what's important. So they're doing for Krishna. And along with that, it means you put in that effort. And then Yoga Maya creates, you know, makes the transformation of the energy. And so then you have something nice cooked for Krishna, and then that's offered to Krishna. But it's about pleasing Krishna, not about the transformation. The transformation comes on its own. You cook for Krishna, the transformation happens. Well, for the materialist, he thinks because I did the work, I got the transformation to happen, and therefore see what a great cook I am, and this and that, and all that. But it's actually, no, you just cook for, the great cook is the one who cooks for Krishna. And then that transformation that happens will be, you know, according to however, the, you know, the Lord's desire, it works out. Does this make any sense? Yeah? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So we see is that this mantra is special because it's non-different from Krishna, just like the holy name is non-different from Krishna. So in other words, second initiation for us means getting the Kama Gayatri. You know, it comes with Kama Bija and then Guru Gauranga mantras, right? But the main point is you're initiated into Kama Gayatri. Does that make sense? Yeah, and that brings you to Krishna. Right? Some will say, oh, it's very dangerous, can create so much desire and this and that. Is you're already living in a place that's so much desire. So, you know, you're trying to switch it from here to Krishna. Right? Okay, one more, I see. Okay. Text 28. Brahma praises the Lord. Becoming enlightened by this Gayatri, Brahma became thoroughly knowledgeable of the highest truth. He satisfied Keshava by the following verses of praise, following the statements of the Vedas. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur comments. Brahma thought thus within himself, quote, by the recollection of Kama Gayatri, it seems to me that I am the eternal maidservant of Krishna, end quote. Though the other mysteries in regard to the condition of the maidservant of Krishna were not revealed to him, Brahma, by dint of his searching self-consciousness, became well acquainted with the ocean of truth. All the truths of the Vedas were revealed to him, and with the help of those essences of the Vedas, he offered this hymn to the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. Sriman Mahaprabhu has taught this hymn to his favorite disciples, inasmuch as it fully contains all the transcendental truths regarding the Vaishnava philosophy. Readers are requested to study and try to enter into the spirit of this hymn with great care and attention as a regular daily function. Brahma Samhita 5:28 purport. So this is all, you know, this is the end of, so there's, I think it's, it means there's more of this. It might even just be from this verse, but there's I think it's known as the Hare Krishna address, because I think Prabhupada gave, he spoke that. That's what he mentioned. It's maybe it was when he was in Butler, when he did the lecture there at some program like that. And then I think it's been used many times. It's maybe even been made into a little pamphlet like that. And, you know, so it gives all the philosophy and everything in a very nice, concise way, a very poetic way. And that, and this is the end of it that we may, you know, be familiar with. Yeah. So that's the, so thoroughly knowledgeable of the highest truth and from the statements of the Vedas, because the Vedas are only talking about Krishna and, you know, Achinta Veda Veda Tattva, about developing love for Krishna. You know, and all these different aspects, they're all there in the Veda. But the Veda, the way it's written, it uses words that are tend to be obscure. That's generally the definition of vocabulary. You know, the what do you call it? So it's one of the four means when you have the six, the Vedas and the Vedangas, then you have what do you call it? You have the means that in grammar, in Sanskrit, you have Siksha, Chanda, Vyakaran, Nirupta. So in Nirupta, then that is the words and their definitions, you know, what we call nowadays lexicography, you know, dictionaries. And so in there, then the meaning is that the meaning of obscure, the obscure meanings of words. So the Vedas especially use obscure meanings, but, you know, classical will use poetic. So it may be something obscure or not, but the point is in the context of the poetry that's going on, you can tell what is the context. So therefore you can see what synonym or what aspect is being used, so you know what it means. If you understand the language and understand the culture and everything, then you can appreciate it, right? That's why it's so hard to translate things from poetry from one language to another, because many times they don't have the same kind of thing. You know, in one language it means something, and in another it's you know, it comes off completely different. You know, it might be the same point, but it's not necessarily as pleasant an explanation, just like, let's say, and baby, which means they're at the opera festival, and at the same time, because the crowd's there, I can sell my bananas. Right? People are there all day, they get hungry, they'll buy my bananas. I get to see the Roth and I get to sell my bananas. Right? You translate that into English, it's kill two birds with one stone. Right? Not as inspiring, right? Unless you're McGrory, yes, then it's, oh wow, two with one, okay, yeah. It's like a sale. You go to the market, buy one, get one free, yeah, okay. Okay. So the Veda has all these things, so it's not that it's there, but the essence of that is in Bhagavatam. So then understanding Bhagavatam, then when you look at the Vedas and the Puranas and the Upanishads and the Vedanta Sutra and all, then you can see is this is the actual hermeneutics. This is how you interpret and understand. And then some scholars may say is, oh, but that's not what the word means. First of all, we're looking at, because you have hermeneutics, so you have a philosophy, so it's going to be the way that you're going to look at it. Two is, Mona Williams, I think, tried his best and did some nice job, but there you see Prabhupada generally never says in Monier Williams, then this is what the word means in Sanskrit. He'll be referring to Amar Kosh, which is a very concise work. It's I think it's about a thousand verses, a little over, or maybe 1,200 verses. There's 10,000 words in there, so it'll give words, it'll show what synonyms, what and give definitions of that. It's a basic thing. So what would happen is, kids, generally before they went to Gurukul, they memorized that. So from the age of 3, 4, they sat in the house, they memorized it. They didn't go to school to memorize it. And in the house, they're speaking Sanskrit, but you're going to be using more colloquial kind of things by, chair, eat, foot, yeah, smelly, that kind of stuff. But then they learn, so the child then learns all this, and then he's memorized all these. When he goes to Gurukul, he hasn't learned the grammar, but he has a 10,000 word vocabulary, right? I'm not sure. I think the common, most people only use about 2,000 words, and that might have been going back a little in time. In the modern, it's not necessarily as much. I mean, I remember, I think back in the 60s, then I'm not sure that I think you're at least on the West Coast. I can't speak for the East Coast. I think they were more educated and more what do you call it? Intellectual out there, the hippies. But the West Coast dirty hippies, that's what they were called, and that's what they called themselves. I kind of remember a 25-word vocabulary. Yeah, groovy or cool or man. It's like man did everything. It means like man. It means you did everything with man. Yeah. Well, that was the guy you were against. It was the man. Yeah, but it did. Yeah, it worked. So you see, it's like that. So. You have a 5-year-old with a 10,000 word vocabulary. So that's how they start. So my point is that those who, basically get an equivalent of a third grade Sanskrit understanding, even though if you do in the university, let's say I go to the university. I don't know English. It's broken English. It's not so good, right? But my father's rich, so I get into the university, right? I get into Oxford. So the first semester, I have to. So it's enough. It's English enough that you can understand what they're saying in the classes, get a grounding on it, and also how to write in that, because generally most come from a background. They have some language and some writing and all that. They just have to be able to transfer that knowledge. So even though you can't say that that is university level English. No, it's not. It's first, second, third grade. Maybe you can read like that, but it's primary school English, right? But most English that anybody uses is not past what a 12-year-old knows, right? It means all the media that you, at least written literature, these magazines, and if they're considered more fancy magazines like, News or Time, Time or Newsweek or these kind of things, or general things that are written, it's written for 12-year-olds. That's considered the universal English like that. Now, if it's, let's say, a tabloid like The Sun, then you might drop it down to, 6, 7, 8 year olds. The sports section, it might, like this. So the point is they target like that what level they're writing at. And then writing at that level, then that's what you have. So it's enough for the university. And then with time, there's certain words that the professor will use because of your subject. You memorize those words. There might be 5, 10 of them or 20 of them that are specific to the topic. And, like that. So over the time, you're good. But we have to remember, we're only dealing with grade school. I mean, literally, right, of what they have to know. So same way in Sanskrit. So therefore, the wideness of the meanings that this word uses, because in Sanskrit, the syllable means something. So it's not just the word, it's also the syllable, its root, it goes down, it has so many things, and what it's going to be. And then that's just, okay, you know the words, that's you memorize, but how do you know the culture it connects to, the application, how people will use it, what it means, because you have people that, learn the whatever is your local language, and they don't know the meanings of certain words, because in the dictionary meaning it means one thing, but how people use it, are another. It has some nuances to it. It means what is said, but it has nuances to it that you won't know unless you accept the culture. And if you reject the Vedic culture, you'll never know it. You just won't know. Therefore, when it says that Brahma, following verses of praise, following the statements of the Vedas, he's getting it straight out of the Vedas. Right? Because at this point, you don't have all the Puranas and everything being documented. Because at this stage, just they hear the Vedas, they can contemplate that and understand everything and all that. And as time goes, then people don't understand. So then the Lord comes as Vyasadeva and then documents it in a way that is there. But when they're describing it, it's not that all these other elements aren't there. It's just that it all has to be in line with the Veda, right? You have the Veda, so the Shruti, then the Smriti, all the other Vedic literatures that are coming, expanding from that, like that. So that's the way it has to go. So it all goes back to the Veda. So you can see is that's why then the smartest thought, because they're more using the Veda and all that. They thought, the Vaishnavas, because the Vaishnavas at the time, a lot of them, these Sahajas and Apasampradayas, they're not that scholarly or even care to be. So they thought, okay, we'll have a discussion or a debate on the philosophy. And so then we have to stick to, it can only be, from the, what do you call it? From the, whatever, the Gita or this or that. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, fine. Or, okay, then what about Upanishads? And he said, yes. And if they go back to Vedas, yes, no problem. Because there are literatures that I think Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in one of them, he takes the uniqueness of it. It's about Dasamul. But it's making the same points as will be made in any of his other books on Dasamul. But the root, he takes it back, I think, at least to the Upanishads. Every point it goes back to an Upanishadic verse. In most of the places, we'll just quote from Bhagavatam or Gita or like this and we're quite comfortable because it's much Vaishnavas. But if you're dealing with those who are not, then they may. So he's written something that those who will only accept Shruti, they won't accept Smriti. Then here it is, like that. They quote from the Vedas, they quote from the Dharma Shastras. I mean, that means the Dharma Sutras or the Brahmanas. They quote from the Upanishads. So you can establish our whole philosophy using those quotes. And then they come up and they get quotes that here. And then, of course, the topmost is going to be from Bhagavatam, like that. You know, so yes, it can be done. So we have to appreciate that the depth of what's there, everything's there. So people were saying, oh, but this is not an actual translation. That's just kind of according to, you know, the Gaudiya angle and all that. It's kind of like, no, that's what it's saying. Achinta Beda Beda Tatra, that's the point. The Gaudiya is bringing out the actual essence of the Veda. And so those who don't know the essence as much or don't know it at all, really, that they may know some social essence and not, but they don't know the spiritual, then they won't understand it. And so then scholars, that's why we say scholars, they know so many things, but it's not that they're not scholars in the devotional understanding, right? So therefore, just because you're a scholar, so what? Yeah, it means as far as the spiritual goes, they don't know anything. It means grammar, this, that, yeah, but you know, yeah. Okay. Verses 29 to 56, the Govindam Adi Purusham prayers, right? So this is what we're used to always hearing. Right? Beginning with verse 29, Brahmaji praises the primeval personality, Sri Govinda, with 31 verses describing the glories of his name, form, qualities, pastimes, opulence, sweetness, transcendental abode, and so on. Text 29 to 31, complete perfection, the sweetness of Krishna. These verses represent a confidential revelation of the Paramadhamma, Gokula, as distinguished from Goloka. Right? So here is that you're seeing Braj, right? So that's Gokula. And that aspect then is going to be different from Goloka. So in other words, Gokula means it's pure sweetness, it's pure unalloyed devotion. Goloka means there's the aspect, some addition of majesty there. So it may be, there's always going to be sweetness in Goloka, but it will have varying degrees of majesty, right? So Mathura will have, you know, a lot of sweetness, some majesty. Dwarka will have more majesty, like that. If you have the Chaturvyuha, you know, in Swetadweep, that'll be aspects of more majesty, or Varahadev, Vamana Dev, they have places there like that. So it's always going to be have that aspect of there's a touch of majesty there to some degree, depending on the realms like that. So he's making the distinction is you're distinguishing here Gokula from Goloka like that. Does that make sense? Just as Sri Brahma Samhita began with the description of the topmost seat of intimate pastimes, Yogapit, right, means in these previous verses. This section again returns to that superior place, right? Because it started off when you had the Yogapit, right? You had the mantra, and then it has the yantra, and then that in the center in the hexagonal, that has the main essential point. So the mantras, all the other things are on the points around it, and then around that's all the petals and all that. So then they're going back to that place because that Gokula is the basis of everything else. From Gokula expands, the other aspects. And then from that you see is expanding Paramdhamma, meaning the Mahanarayan, right? And then from there, then you get again the Chaturvyuha and all these aspects. So you're going to get, you know, those features and then coming down from there. And so depending upon the line, they know more, like let's say the Sri Sampradaya, they know Mahanarayan, Chaturvyuha, And then from Sankarshan coming the Purusha avatar, Mahavishnu, Garbhodakshay Vishnu, Kiradakshay Vishnu. Then from Kiradakshay comes all the Leela avatars. So for them, that's the line. They don't even know. And for them, even things like Dwarka Mathura are not part of that scene. It's only there's the supreme Vaikuntha. There are no other Vaikunthas. There are no other aspects. So you can see it's been kept very simple because he's the one bringing them from Buddhism, into or Mayavada and that into devotional service. So he keeps it very essential. Madhua then will understand them that Dwarka and Mathura are part of that scene. And depending upon, their taste, they may get involved, but they're still dealing with the secondary expansion. They're not dealing with the primary. So they don't really know. So even though you may talk about it, they're still very happy with the service to Mahanarayan. Whether they, I don't know if the Madhvas know about the other Vaikuntha planets, but or not, I'm not sure. But in any case, you're seeing here is that you're starting from that point, and then from there everything expands. Right? In these verses, we find no trace of Krishna as God. Instead, Brahma expresses his profound mood of longing for Swayam Krishna, the cowherd boy of Braja, by praising his four unique qualities. One, Leela Madhurya, unique sweet pastimes. Two, Prema Madhurya, uniquely sweet devotees. Three, Venu Madhurya, uniquely sweet all attractive flute. And Rupa Madhurya, uniquely sweet beauty. Right? Because those are the special qualities that are there, so these are the ones that come out, right? Text 29, Krishna's abode and associates. Chintamani Prakarasadmasu Kalpavriksha Lakshavriteshu Surabhir Abhipalayantam Lakshmi Sahasrasatasambrahmasevyamanam Govindamari Purusham Tamaham Vajami. Okay. I worship the Supreme Lord Govinda, who affectionately tends the cows and stables, whose walls are made of Chintamani, surrounded by desire trees. He is eagerly served by countless gopis, Lakshmi Sahasrashata. As mentioned in verse 30, there are two means of realizing the unmanifest pastimes of Krishna, right? Unmanifest means the aprakat. Means the prakat means ones that we see are here. The aprakat means the ones that you don't see, right? It means like you go to Vrindavan now, the prakat pastimes are not manifest. The aprakat is going on, right? At the same time as, whatever we see is there is going on, but behind that in the same place is the aprakat. So prakat means then if you went there, you would see those pastimes, right? So unmanifest. So that also means Goloka would be considered aprakat because for them, for those that are in Goloka or in this place, Gokula, then in this, they would see that the Gokul pastimes there and the Gopal pastimes here are the same. The difference being just one is situated up and one is situated down. But for them, there's no difference, right? We tend to make a difference that, oh yeah, well, this is just here. We're talking about there. No, they're the same thing. He is eagerly served by countless Lakshmis, Lakshmi Sahasrashata. As mentioned in verse 3, there are two means of realizing the unmanifest pastimes of Krishna, each appropriate to the sadhaka in different stages, mantramayi upasana and swarasiki upasana. According to Jiva Goswami, these yield realization corresponding to two types of pastimes. One, mantropasana, jhana, mayi, lila. By meditating on certain mantras, one can attain realization of a single pastime in a specific place. Swarasiki lila, the more spontaneous contemplation of all the pastimes collectively, revealing a variety of lilas occurring in various places. Right? So, means mantropasana, like we see here, is the Kama Gayatri can give the mantropasana. But we see, from this is that then he's coming to that point of swarasiki. So the swarasiki is not something you practice. It's not a sadhana. It's happening naturally. It means the mantropasana jnana mayulila. That is that certain mantra is there. It has the different elements. You meditate upon that, how it's describing Krishna or the environment, like let's say, what's that? Vrindaranya Kalpadruma, what's the beginning of that? Is he talking about in Vrindavan, under a transcendental, Kalpavriksha tree on a golden throne, is sitting Radha and Krishna surrounded by their associates, right? So then you can see that, you see that aspect like that. So it's a specific pastime in a specific, place, right? But you can say, no, but I want to own the other. But if you can't do this, how you do that? No, but I want to, I ride the bike. First learn how to walk. No, that doesn't matter. I'll just ride the bike. He says, you can't even get to the bike. You can't even walk, so, yeah. The Acharyas explain that this verse is an example of the superior meditation on Swarasiki Leelas that occur in Yogapit, right? Because he's talking about affectionately tends his cows and stables whose walls are made of chintamani. So he tends his cows and like, surrounded by desire trees, eagerly served by countless gopis. So it has all the things that will go on with that. So the gopis are serving in this way, the cows he's taking out, he's doing all this. All these things are happening. So he's able to see all that. That's why I was saying becoming enlightened by this Gayatri, right? So, think, oh, well, I have to go to Vrindavan, go to Radhakund, speak to the Babas there, then I can understand these things. No, you've already got the mantra by your guru that you can do that. And if you think you have to go to these people, then you don't actually understand. And if you do go to those people, the problem is the Brajabasis won't let you into Vrindavan. Means you can go there physically, but you won't be allowed in the pastimes because they don't trust you. This is, and you can say, no, it's like this. This is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, I think, in Raghmartman Chandrika. He's making the point that you have to go through the line through this, because the point is you're serving in a line, and if you don't stick to that line, it's that, okay, well, something here, but I could get more from over there, I could get more from, who wants you around? Right? If you're in Radharani's group under Rupa Goswami, following the founder Acharya, you stick to that line. And you're going off here and there, thinking you're going to get something, especially when it's not recommended. Then they're going to say, this guy's not serious. We have to remember, it's not us. We're not the doers. It's not, I went there, I did this, therefore I'm going to get. It's not karma. This is Krishna reveals. You please him, he reveals. You don't please him, it's not revealed. And it's like that. It's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. It's that simple. You say, no, it's this, but you have to do that. Otherwise, how do you do it? Point is it already has all this I've been mentioned on Mahavinda Gopinath. Those are the three features that Krishna's there, the Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana, or the Satchit Ananda is going to Gopinath and Mahan. I mean, he's Sambandha, but it's the song, it's a tendency to say it like that. But the point is that's all there in seed form. It's like if you say, no, I want a banyan tree. Okay, well, here's a seed. You can grow the banyan tree. No, I want a banyan tree. No, it's a, the seed will grow the banyan tree. No, I want, that's just, So that's, it's a problem. Problem. Yeah. Okay, there's an example, okay, that occur in Yogapit. And it gives here, okay, this is from Digdarshani Tika. So that is Jiva Goswami's comments. Yeah. Okay. So then the other is the purport of the Brahma Samhita. That will be Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And then this is Digdarshini will be Jiva Goswami. In Goloka, many different areas such as the Rasa arena can be realized by using a particular mantra such as the Brihadhyana mantra found in Kramadipika. by which one attains realization of a particular pastime in that particular place. However, Brahma offers his first verse of praise to Govinda by describing many pastimes suitable for the place called Gokula, the chief of all the abodes, since it is situated in the center of Goloka. Right, it's the highest point, and it's in the center. You know, as we saw, right, by the yantra, the very center, that hexagonal in the center, that's then where the pastimes are. With great absorption, with the deepest love, Govinda protects the cows by tending them and leading them to the forest or the cow pens. Right, it's because they're in the cow pens. He serves them in the cow pens in the morning. Then after, you know, breakfast and all that, and then he takes the cows, they go out to the forest. Then in the evening, he brings them back to the cow pens, you know, like that, and they'll milk the cows and that, and, you know, like this, and do whatever. And then he'll have his bath, have his evening meal. Like in the morning, he goes and milks the cows first. Then he goes and takes his bath. Then he has his breakfast, you know, so the evening would be the same. He comes back, he'd have his bath, serve the cows, have his bath. Then, or if he's not serving, the cowherd men will take care. He's having his bath, then he's having his meal. So, you know, it's always about the cows. So that's why it mentioned that the cows, then it means them, the forest and the cow pens, right? That's why it's not mantroposana dhyana mai, right? It's swarasiki, because it's mentioning the whole, all the different elements that are there. Sometimes in private, however, there are more most extraordinary events. The countless gopis serving Govinda with the greatest love, right? So you have him taking the cows out, right? So that's the point there. But then he's served by all the you know, because it says affectionately tends the cows. They're in the stables made of chintamani, surrounded by desire trees. That sets the scene. And then he's eagerly served by countless gopis. And so that'll be, you know, the more special elements that'll be there. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur also comments on the rest of this verse. By the word chintamani is meant transcendental gem. Just as Maya builds this mundane universe with the five material elements, so the spiritual chit potency has built the spiritual world of transcendental gems. The chintamani, which serves as material in the building of the abode of the Supreme Lord of Goloka. Oh, wait a minute. There was a footnote. Love, footnote 6. Srila Prabhupada uses the present Brahma Samhita verse to demonstrate Krishna's eternal attachment to his loving consorts. In the third canto, quits his Dwarka palaces and retires to the bank of the Saraswati. Quote, the Lord was thus engaged in household life for many, many years, but at last his detachment from ephemeral sex life was fully manifested. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.3.22, Srila Prabhupada explains. Even though the Lord is never attached to any kind of material sex life, as the universal teacher, he remained a householder for many, many years, just to teach others how one should live in household life. The Lord's detachment from household life does not indicate detachment from his eternal associates, the transcendental cowherd damsels, but the Lord desired to end his so-called attachment to the three modes of material nature. Right, means so-called, because he's just performing that, to give example. He can never be detached from the service of his transcendental associates like Rukmini and other goddesses of fortune. As described in the Brahma Samhita, Lakshmi Sahasra Sata Sambrahma Sevyamana. Right, so he mentioned he can not indicate detachment from his eternal associates, the transcendental cowherd damsels. And then he mentions about Rukmini and other goddesses of fortune. Because the point is that here, when that pastime that he's talking about there, Krishna and Dwarka, it's we're talking about that first expansion of the Chaturvyuha. That's directly from Krishna, right? That's not the second one that's coming from Mahanarayan, right? We're talking about the first one that comes from Krishna. So that's why those who are part of the Braja scene, they understand also the Mathura Dwarka, but it's connected. It's an expansion of Braj. While the other is expanding from Mahanarayana. It may have that aspect of Vrindavan and Matra and Dwarka, but it's based on majesty though. So even Vrindavan there has an aspect of majesty that you don't see in the original pastimes. Does that make sense? So there's two layers of this. You have Gokula, you know, means Braj, and then from that are you getting the Dwarka and Mathura. And then, you know, you're expanding Mahanarayan. Then from him is expanding another Chaturvyuha, so you're getting Dwarka and that, and you're also getting these Vrindavan pastimes. Though from what I understand is that the Shris and Madhuas may not know about those. Madhuas might, but the Shris don't. They only know about the Leelas and all that when you come down as expanded from Kiridakshai Vishnu. But in any case, but the Nimbarkas and Nimbarkas, Vallabhas like that, they'll be dealing with this one here, right? And so then they may be dealing in the Vrindavan pastimes, but they don't know about, you know, because the top one is a Chinta Veda Veda Tatra. So if you're only using Dwait, you know, Vishishta Dwait, Vishuddha Dwait, Dwait, Dwait Advait, then you'll be in that second tier. No? So he's pointing, he's never detached from them. He's just detached from performing these pastimes to set example for the conditioned souls and how they can elevate themselves and how they could become Krishna conscious through that. So he's come and shown. But for him, it's the interaction with the devotees. That's what he's doing. He's not actually doing for the other, but there may be that actually he's doing these things to set example. Like you see some of the kings, you know, that are described in later cantos, you know, the mid cantos, that and doing all that not fully necessary with the Vaishnavs, but he's doing the set example of the kingdoms. You see, at some point, then they go to the forest and they don't do that stuff anymore. So just showing how goes through, though he's never attached to these mundane things, but he's, you know, setting the example. So then we get to what the one my Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakura. Where is that 17? Okay. By the word Jhintamani is meant transcendental gem. Just as Maya builds this mundane universe with the five material elements, so the spiritual chit potency has built the spiritual world of transcendental gems. The Chintamani, which serves as material in the building of the abode of the Supreme Lord of Goloka, is far rarer and more agreeable entity than the philosopher's stone. Footnote 17. Regarding the notion of Chintamani Dham, Srila Prabhupada adds, in the Brahma Samhita, it is stated that the ground on the Vaikuntha planets is made of touchstone. Thus, there is no need to sweep the stone in Vaikuntha, for there is hardly any dust on it. But still, in order to satisfy the Lord, the ladies there always engage in dusting the marble walls. Why? The reason is that they are eager to achieve the grace of the Lord by doing so. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:15:21. Yeah. Yeah, the philosopher's stone, I think, is something, right? You can touch up the things and make gold and stuff like that. So people will be very happy with that. You know, you see, Midas was in ecstasy until he had turned everything into gold. But whatever. So, you know, like that. And then he understood gold was a bit overrated, right? You know, so you have like that. That means, like you see, Sanatan Goswami, he had a philosopher's stone in the garbage. You know, garbage, you know, means just where, you know, when you sweep, then there's a pile of dust, he threw it there, you know, not the compost heap, right? And so then, so it's more agreeable because everything's just made and everything's just designed to fulfill Krishna's desire like that. So it transforms perfectly, you know, on the order of Yoga Maya, you know, and does everything nicely. The purpose tree yields only the fruit of piety, wealth, fulfillment of desires, and liberation. Right, so dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, all that. The purpose tree, but the purpose trees in the abode of Krishna bestow innumerable fruits in the shape of checkered divine love. Right, so the in the material world, the purpose tree only gives Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, but in the spiritual world, then they give all the varieties of manifestations of divine love of Krishna, right? Just like the philosopher's stone will give one gold, you know, like that. But there, it's just whatever it means, just makes everything perfect, right? Kama Dhenus, cows yielding the fulfillment of desire, give milk when they are milked. But the Kama Dhenus of Goloka pour forth oceans of milk in the shape of the fountain of love, showering transcendental bliss that does away with the hunger and thirst of all pure devotees. Right, so you just see it's imbued with that divine love for Krishna. So that becomes the important element. These things here, because we see it's a reflection. So you have here the Sarabi cows, you have the desire trees, you have these things, but they only, you know, appear, right? But then in the spiritual world, then the commendator's there, and the desire trees there, and the Chintamani stone there. It's just making the wonderful, the variety of trans love for Krishna. Right, and the hunger and thirst of the pure devotees is they're fully absorbed in Krishna's service, and they're doing nice things and offering to Krishna, and then they're taking those remnants, so they have no hunger and thirst because they're always serving Krishna and just taking his remnants, and you know, so they're fully absorbed in the service because their bodies don't have fatigue, they don't get thirsty, they don't get fatigued, they don't get hungry. So all it is a transcendental desire to taste Krishna's remnants or to like this, but it's not that they don't eat, they die. It's not kind of like here, right? You know. Yeah. Okay, text 30. Krishna's incomparable beauty. Oh, okay, so that was abode and associates, incomparable beauty. Vainum quanantam aravinda dalayataksham varahavatam samasitam buddhasundarangam kandarpakoti kamaniya visesha shobham Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Pachami. I worship the Supreme Lord Govinda, who plays a flute, whose eyes are like lotus petals, who wears a peacock feather on his head, whose bodily hue is attractive like a dark cloud, and whose beauty is more spectacular than that of millions of cupids. Srila Prabhupada explains the superlative nature of this most intimate darshan. Although the Lord is one in his various forms, Advaita Machuta Manadim, still his form is the young enjoyer of the gopis and the companion of the cowherd boys. Kishorda Murti is the most perfect form. Right? So where you have the aspect where he's interacting fully, you know, nicely blown pastimes with the gopis and the cowherd boys, then that's his Kishore form, right? Because before that, the Paugunda is predominantly the cowherd boys. And his Kumara, then, is predominantly Mother Yashoda and the elder gopis, right? It means everybody's there at all the times, but it's whose pastime is it, right? Right. Who's Krishna? Is he yours or is he mine? Like that one, yeah. The Karmis simply want to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead as their order supplier. The Jnanis want to see him to become one with him. And the yogis want to see him partially represented within their heart as Paramatma, right? Because Paramatma means it's just him in his form. It's not with his associates and pastimes and Dham and everything. Paramatma means just Paramatma, right? But the bhaktas or the devotees want to see him in his complete perfection. Srimad Bhagavatam 4:24, 44 purport. Jiva Goswami describes how this pastime is the object of mantra-mayi upasana. Brahma has described the swarasiki pastime, such as dancing for walking and songs for speaking, in the extraordinary abode of Gokula within Goloka, which is filled with houses and walls made of chintamani stone, or means with touchstone. Footnote 18. Later on in verse 56, there are descriptions such as Kataganam Natyam Gamanamipi. In that abode, every word is a song, every gate is a dance, the flute is the favorite. Right, so that means then the first one of this prayer, 29, and the last one, 56, then they're talking about that dham, that Goloka dham, and it's the Swarasiki, right? Now these two verses, 30 and 31, beginning with the words Venunquanantam, describe the second place of pastimes. Wherein the mantra Upasana Mayi Lila, the subject of this detailed meditation, takes place. The mantra Upasana Mayi Lila is situated in one place without the singing, dancing, and so on included in Swarasiki Rasa. Right? So it doesn't have all the variations. It's what is there in the mantra, that's what's there. And so then if you can be meditating. Things, but this is its mantra upasana mayi. That's how you get to the swarasiki. It's not that, you know, there's a sadhana for the swarasiki. That's what mantra upasana means, practice. And swarasiki doesn't have the word practice in it, right? Where is it? You mentioned about the two swarasiki lila. It doesn't say swarasiki upasana dhyana mayi lila. No, you know, because that's what the Sahajiyas and others will try to say is, oh, but we're giving that. You're only getting this mantra, Vasa. We're giving this and this. No, you're not. Don't come back. You can't give that. Krishna gives that. If you say you're giving that, then you're a Mayavadi. That's all. No, Krishna reveals that. So it's just, one has to know how it works. You know, it's just like there, I don't know. It's regular London Bridge and you're very much impressed by it. You might have a guy walk up to you and offer to sell it to you. You like it so much, you can buy it. You come to his office, he'll have all the papers, everything like that. You do everything. You put down the money and all that, and you know, whatever it is. And then, you know, you get the deed and all that. And then you come back and say, hey, all you cars, this is mine. And like, oh, what's this? And you go to the place and there's nothing there, right? You know, so yeah. So if you want that, yes, you can be an illusion and think I can get it all like this by my own arrangements and I'm so fabulous because the whole process is centered on me anyway, right? I want the Swarasiki Lila because I want to enjoy that, but that's not what's going on. No, the eternal associates are pleasing Krishna. Therefore, they're part of the scene. If you want to enjoy it, then, you know, you got to sit in your living room with your own, you know, what do you call it? You know, bowl of popcorn and then, you know, watch whatever is going on the television. That you can do, but you can't say I'm just going to, you know, just come into, walk into the pastimes. Here I am, you know, hey, I want to do that. You know, oh, you're bathing, Radha. I want, give me the pot. I want to pour the water. Yeah, no, it's not going to happen. Yeah. No, not even with chilies up your nose. The mantra Upasana Mayi Lila is situated in one place without the singing, dancing, so forth, including the Swarasiki Lila, right? But just as sadhana goes into rag, you know, naturally, you don't have, let's say, you know, oh, it's a separate sadhana. They'll take us, no, but it mentions that there's, you know, how you say, the sadhana has two parts, you know, the vaidhi and the rag. That means there's a rag sadhana. No, there's not. There is the sadhana bhakti, and you're doing it because of the mentality of vaidhi, or you're doing it because of the mentality of rag. You're there, that's good. That's sadhana bhakti, that's that vaidhi. But if you're going there because you like to get up in the morning and see Krishna first thing in the morning, That's rag sadhana. It's still sadhana bhakti, but it's rag, like that. You know, just like, you know, the brahmacharis and the bhaka halva. It's not vaidhi. That's like, that's rag, right? That's pure attachment, spontaneous, yeah, like that. Of course, they may have a different view on it. That, you know, after a few hours when they're sitting there and they can't move and they go, oh, like that. Then they might rethink and start to use their intelligence and that and bring in the aspects of vaidhi. But yeah. So the point is that the one goes into the other. It's natural. Just like you practice doing something like riding your bike, so at some point it becomes natural. You don't have to think about it. You don't have to think about the pedaling and getting the things and getting the two at once and also breathing. You know what I mean? Like moving your feet, hands, and breathing. You know what I mean? It's already tough enough when you do the, you know, this one or, you know, or then reverse it, right? What is it? You know, and that, and jump up and down at the same time. No? Yeah, like that. So, yeah. Okay. Now, here a single pastime within a second abode, which is realized through a type of meditation on Krishna, is described. This pastime is devoid of variegated activities and places, where, like variegated activities and places, because like the other one, it mentions the cows and the tends the cows in the stables, you know, I mean, the cow pen. But the point is he's tending the cows out, so many pastimes tending cows, and there's so many happening within the in the cow in the this is devoid of variegated activities and places where speaking is singing and walking is dancing. His is a realization of only one pastime taking place in one particular place. This is described in two verses, Dikdarshini Tika 5:30. Right. So then at two verses, so I guess it means this one and the next one. So you have in the Veda, because this mantra upasanamayi, you know, what do you call it? It is mantra upasanamayi lila, mantra upasana dhyanamayi lila. I guess that's the full name. So then in the verses of the Veda, when it mentions who's the rishi of the mantra, that is which rishi, by meditating on that mantra and mantra upasana dhyanamayi, became perfect. So it's a very standard thing, but then it can go where it goes beyond, and then you see what's beyond all that, right? So it just expands. But until you can deal with that and be focused on that, you can't get the rest of it. You know, like that. And it's not that it's a problem. Like, you know, the gopis see Krishna, but they only see him for a moment. But then that picture is in their mind at all times, all places, all things. They're always thinking that. So they're just thinking of one thing. There's nothing else going on. And then it's fine because they're fully absorbed. And then from that they become qualified, and then they develop Purva Rag, then they're able to take part in the pastimes. So the one goes into the other, and this negate that, oh, that's lower, we only do the higher. That's for sahajas. That's just a very simple definition of what's this, bring it down to our level and like this, and then, you know, like that. Yeah. Verse 30, Deinum Kwanantam describes the incomparable beauty of Sri Krishna. Srila Prabhupada describes the sound of Krishna's flute. Quote, the sound vibrated by his flute would give his friends such transcendental pleasure that they would forget all the talks of the Brahmananda, which is so praised by the impersonalists, end quote. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.229 purport. Moreover, just as a dark blue rain cloud is a soothing sight for the eye, similarly Krishna's bluish complexion is a joy to behold. Moreover, if one could multiply a millionfold the attractive qualities present in Cupid, the result of creation would still become madly infatuated upon seeing Sri Krishna's enchanting swarup. Yeah, so in other words, you take Cupid, you multiply him by a millionfold, and then that form of Cupid would still go mad seeing, you know, in just attraction in seeing Krishna. So in other words, and it's like you have attraction in the material platform is Cupid, then generally that's, you know, people are very happy with that. You know, multiply that a million times, it's like, you know, who that you know that just doesn't happen, right? And then on top of that, that form of Cupid, he would go mad seeing Krishna like that. So Krishna is just so far beyond, it doesn't even count. Okay. More than just a pretty picture, Srila Prabhupada indicates how this verse constitutes the basis for the entire human religious endeavor. Depiction to be interviewer. I think history shows that many people have misused religion. Isn't that a fact? Like that. Even then, they're still harassing and annoying like that. Like, Srila Prabhupada, these people have no conception of God, and they are preaching religion. How long can it go on artificially? It will deteriorate. We have a clear conception of God, Krishna. He is giving his order, and we accept it. It is clear religion. If there is no God, no conception of God, no order of God, then where is religion? If there is no government, then where is the law? Right? He said, if you're not following the laws of God, then, you know, there's no laws to follow, then where's God? So you see, it just goes, you know, yeah. Interviewer, well, there wouldn't be any law. It would be an outlaw society. So see how probably the guy's come in with his, you know, coming in for his gotcha moment, you know, and hey, you know, what about this and that? I think history shows, you know, history shows means it's a fact. If so, it's not just my opinion. Right, have misused religion, right? Isn't that a fact? Now, isn't he saying, isn't that a fact, trying to confirm it from you to use against you, right? So he gets you to agree to his point so that he can use that point now as authority against you. And then Prabhupada says, yeah, they have no conception of God. They're preaching religion. How can it go on artificially? It will deteriorate. You have to have a clear conception of God, Krishna. He is giving his order, and we accept it. It is clear religion. So God is there. We accept Krishna and he gives his order. We accept that. We follow. That is clear religion. There's no God, no conception of God, no order of God. Then where is religion? Right? Because for some, they follow the culture. There's no God, or they don't. They say there's God, but they don't really have a conception of God. And then they don't worry about the order of God like that. Where's religion? If there's no government, then where's the law? And then the interviewer is going, you know, nice, you know, it's just going, yeah, well, there wouldn't be any law. So now he's answering Prabhupada's question instead of the other way around. Right? It would be an outlaw society. Prabhupada, outlaw, right? So now he's already cut. Now he said outlaw society. Take that. Okay, now you're talking. You know, so he wants the Prabhupada to speak on what he's saying, but he's everyone is an outlaw. Yeah. Manufacturing his own concocted system of religion. That is going on. Just ask, in any religious system, what is their concept of God? Can anyone tell clearly? No one can tell. But we shall immediately say, Venum quanantam aravinda dalaya taksham. If there's no idea of God, then what kind of religion is that? Interviewer, I don't know. You know, he's already gone. Srila Prabhupada, it is bogus, right? So now it's like, I don't know, so it's bogus. You know, so I've already established it. People have no conception of God, and therefore they have no understanding of religion. That is the decline. And because religion is declining, the human beings are becoming more and more like animals. Animal means one that has no memory. That's interesting. A dog comes when there are some edibles. I say, hut, and he goes away. But again he comes. He has no memory. So when a memory of God is reducing, that means that our human qualities are reducing. In the Kali Yuga, these human qualities will be reduced. That means that people are becoming like cats and dogs. Science of self-realization, human society, or animal society. So therefore you have a concept of God, then now is then he's a person. God gives an order as a person to you as a person, then you try to follow that, then that becomes very clear religion, like that. So we have to understand the religion is following God's law, like that. And that order is handed down through the parampara. That's where the parampara comes in, is because, like it said before, the mango is ripe on the top and it's become ripened, perfectly ripened on the tree. It's very, very soft. So they make everybody gets up at a certain point in the tree, and that, and then the top one picks it up. He gives it to the next one, and he very carefully gives it to the next one. He gives it to the next one. Nobody's taking a bite out of it on the way down, or putting it away and then bringing out a different one and giving that, something like that. And so, giving a picture, or, their card, where they can come and get the mango, so they're just coming down, and then you get this perfect mango. So that's the point. But they've handed down the order as God gave it, the person to you, the person through people. Right? That's religion. So that's the point. Is so therefore, if you know this is what Krishna is like, we've heard about the past, but do you know who he is? And he gives law and all that. So you follow, so it works. Right? Does that make any sense? Yeah. Okay, then text 31. Govinda's amorous pastimes. Alola Chandar Kala Sadvana Malyavamsi Ratnangadam Pranaya Keli Kalavilasham Shyamam Tribanga Lalitam Niyataprakasham Govindamadipurusham Tamahangajami. I worship Govinda, the primeval lord, round whose neck is swinging a garland of flowers, beautified with the moon locket. Right? Whose hands are adorned with a flute and jeweled ornaments, who always revels in pastimes of love, whose graceful threefold bending form of Shyamasundara is eternally manifest. So footnote 19 says, Chandraka, moon locket, can also mean the eye of the peacock feather. Thus Govinda would have a shining garland and a swinging peacock feather. Chandrika can also refer to a type of jasmine. In such case, Govinda would have a shining garland of jasmine swaying in the breeze. Okay. Beautified with moon locket, Chandrika. So it's going to either mean the peacock feathers, so there might be peacock feathers in there, or there might be also kind of jasmine that's there that makes it very beautiful. Because the white flowers, of all the flowers, the white ones are Krishna's favorite. Because you'll generally see is the white ones are the ones that have all the smell, have all the fragrance. They have the most intense smell, like that. So that's generally the thing. But they're also the small, they're very nice, very, delicate and that. And you can make very nice garlands, you can make very fine garlands with them and everything. So of all the flowers, means anything with fragrance that is going to be pleasing to Krishna. But of them, the white ones are considered the yes, the best. Okay, so then we'll stop here, and then we will continue next week. Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki Jai Samaveta Bhaktavrinda ki Jai Chaitanya Gaura Premanandi Hari Hari Bol Gaura Hari Bol Jai Jai Hari Bol.